Welcome to Behind the Scenes with Your Health Radio, here with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page and our guest, Dr. Jonathan Fisher, who we've been talking with about improving end-of-life care for low-income patients. Thanks for talking with us a few minutes further, Dr. Fisher.
Thanks for having me.
You know, Dr. Fisher, one of the things that we really started the conversation with earlier was this: you were a family doctor in training and you saw needs with those who were dying and the difficulties, and then you wanted to combine really some public health work and really improving quality of care and systems of care. But I wonder now, having now done two things, a clinical work and more systems work, you also still are a family doctor and seeing patients. Let's bring it back around. How have you in your own practice changed over time in how you approach end-of-life care, palliative care decisions?
I think it's been an evolution, and I continue to grow with that. But I think what's happened is that I've just become more aware of the ever-presence of that issue and how difficult it is for patients to bring that up and for physicians as well. So I've really taken it upon myself to pause when I'm within the care of a complex patient. So rather than just spending the 15, 20 minutes, half hour that I have with them going through the various chronic illnesses and the medications they're on and checking in about all of those issues, to really devote at least one office visit every few months and or at least some portion of every office visit to think about how is this going, and to really sometimes just ask that question to patients: how is this going for you? You know, do you feel happy or comfortable about how the care is progressing? And are you at peace? Or is there something else that I should know about what you want to get accomplished?
Great questions. Mm-hmm. Powerful questions.
Mm-hmm. How do people, I mean, do you feel like people are ready and open to having those questions? Or sometimes when I ask patients, they're like, wait a minute, what are you not telling me? Am
exactly.
I about to die?
Right. And I do get that. Well, am I dying? Why are you asking me that? But oftentimes then after that, I say, well, no, I don't think you're dying right now. But the fact of the matter is you've been in the hospital a couple times this year, and we have to look at how things are going. And I can't predict the future, but it's very possible that one of these times that you end up in the hospital, you might not return to the state of health that you're in now. So it helps me to know moving forward, if that should happen, how do you want to be treated? What are the important things in your care that would be important for me as your provider, as your physician, to know and to be able to communicate to other doctors that would be caring for you? Or it's a great opportunity at that point to say, you know, if you get to a point where you can't speak for yourself, who in your family or friends would be in a position to speak for you? And have you told them that they're in that position?
I also think it's kind to encourage the patients, too, to talk with their families or to bring the families in on these conversations, because a lot of times, as you said, it's left to that family to decide, do I put that feeding tube in, as we were talking about earlier, just feelings of, is it okay for me not to feed my family member?
Right.
And how do you tie that into the office visit?
And you get that question, when you ask that question of a patient too, sometimes you get the feedback of, you know, I really don't want to talk about this. And that's important information too, because every person has a different tolerance and a different desire to hear information. And one of the key questions is how much do they want to know? And it's oftentimes difficult just to ask that question outright, but you can get that same information by asking them how things are going and seeing their response. And if they want to continue that conversation further, you'll know it.
Yeah, I have to laugh a little bit at myself. About 10 years ago, I remember having a conversation with a patient with very bad obstructive pulmonary disease, and they had been in the hospital about six times in about 6 weeks, so it seemed, and knew that this didn't seem to be a good prognostic indicator. And I asked about possibly hospice care, and they were pretty much surprised. And 10 years later, they reminded me when I saw them not too long ago. I said, remember you asked about that hospice care 10 years ago? And I said, you know, one of the happiest days of my life is when you just told me that, remember 10 years ago, and that you've lived, but at least we knew some of your preferences of what you wanted and didn't want, which is helpful. I like the way you said that. I guess one I have one other question though, Dr. Fisher, which is you mentioned cost of care. You kind of slid that in there at the beginning of our interviews that this was about improving quality of care but also reducing cost of care. We haven't really spoken about that. How does this really reduce cost of care? Because if I think if it increased cost of care, I wonder if we'd be having this conversation.
Well, there's no clear answer that high quality of care at the end of life improves costs. And on some level, it doesn't matter to me. I'm really doing this to improve the quality of care. However, the default, and you used that word before, and I think that's true. I like saying our system is in default. It's easier to tell a patient just to go to the emergency room than it is to have a difficult conversation about goals of care. So our default is to send patients to the emergency room, to do PEG tubes on patients with dementia, to do a third or fourth round of chemotherapy, even if that is not necessarily going to improve a patient's quality of life or extend their life or even be what they would want if they knew all the different options. So on some, there's some measure of cost savings to be had if we give patients the options to choose what they want done to them or what they don't want done to them. Since at the moment, pretty much the default is do the costly thing to everybody, there's going to be some measure of cost savings. So we're fortunate. We can work to improve the quality of care and at the same time achieve cost savings just as a natural consequence of that.
I really like the way you frame that as the byproduct of providing really high quality care. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Fisher, for taking a few extra minutes with us on Behind the Scenes and for our fantastic conversation today, and certainly for the work you're doing to improve end-of-life care among patients and for patients with low income.
Thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it.